first when they're ready.
Interview with Donald Warner, continuing at January 13th, 1987. All right, we'll start with the Bushnell Tavern.
Okay, Bob, let's talk about the Bushnell Tavern. You read something about it in the Lakeville Journal recently. I do know something about it because that house is where I grew up and lived after I was very young, about 2 years old, till I went away to service in World War II. My family bought the place, I think, around 1921, and they moved, had the tavern moved back around 120 feet, perhaps 40 yards from where it was, which was right up by the road. And there were two large conifer pine trees in front of it. One of them was demolished, I believe, in the 1938, a really bad hurricane, and was taken down. And of course, don't remember it when it was in that situation, but my family had E.E. Rainsford, who was about the only contractor in the area, do the work.
You said E.D.?
E.E.
Oh, E.E. Rainsford?
Rainsford.
Rainsford.
And his son was Bill Rainsford, who was also a contractor, and who I do remember and did know, and who was our state representative at one point in Hartford. So the tavern was moved back and placed where the house now sits. And about 3 years later, a wing was built which faces on Factory Street, or the street going towards Mount Riga. And substantially, that's the way the house is now and was since about 1925. There was no picket fence around the property when it was bought by my family. And there was a stable in the back, and my father used to ride a horse. Maybe the horse was Senior. And a barn, and et cetera. I was glad to have this sort of put to rest in the Lakeville Journal by Dwight Coles and Lila Nash with an assistance from me, I guess. That used to, before the tavern was moved back, or the house was moved back, the town Christmas tree was in one of the big, tall spruces. And there were Christmas carols sung there, I'm told, and Lila Nash remembered this, on Christmas Eve, and the whole village would gather in front of the tree and sing carols. Now, I do have a photo of that, which is now over in the Scoville Library, where it's going to be re-photographed and be part of their historic exhibit, Old Salisbury Annan. Now, Factory Street.
Just before you leave the house, who did your family buy it from?
You really have to look that up in the land records. I don't recall right now, but it'd be very easy to check that out. Okay. I do not think it was a Bushnell, but it was known as the Bushnell Tavern, but it's in the land records. It's very easy.
It was not a tavern.
I am not certain about that, but it's always been known as the Bushnell Tavern. I don't think it was a tavern in 1920. No.
Now, the surrounding area was very much like it is now with the town hall there, the Congregational Church,
oh,
the
yes.
library.
Yes, the library across the street, the Stowell Library was there, the Congregational Church, and the town hall were all there. And the little red office that my grandfather and father practiced law in was there. So it was really, and the brick building, which is the circuit court building, was there. At that time. So, yes, it was basically pretty much the same.
So now going up Factory Street.
Well, Factory Street was called Factory Street because my grandfather had various business interests aside from being a lawyer, and there were two factories on the street. And I may be wrong, but I believe they made knife handles, wooden knife handles. One was located up the stream called the Salmon Kill, I think mainly, coming down from Mount Riga, near where Carl Stoker's house is. That burned down. And the other one was located about 500 or 600 yards up the street, very near where there's a little pond there where Marion Roy and Babs McLean have a house on that pond. There's a pond, and then the road splits, one going up to Lion's Head and the other one going up to Mount Riga. Both of them burned. I believe one burned in the '20s. I don't remember that, but the other one burned, I believe, in the early '30s. After my grandfather was no longer very active in this business, my uncle Philip Warner, at one point, had something to do with it. Then they had people who were the managers of the factory. And most of the little houses, which are now all gussied up and bringing big prices, were really houses for people who worked in the factory. Yes, they were small frame houses. You wouldn't know it looking at them now. So it was called Factory Street in those days.
Well, do you happen to know why the factory settled in that area? Was it the
power? Well, because of the water.
The
water power coming down from the brook from South Pond, Mount Riga. That was a logical place to have them. I haven't any idea how many people worked in the factories or much about it, but I'm sure that David Brzee would know some of this, or some people around there.
Was that functioning when you were
One of the factories was. The other one had already burned. You can't even see where the upper one burned first. I don't even know whether you could ascertain where the foundations were.
Who were the people that worked in the factory?
I really don't know. Although I think there was a man named Farwell. There have been some Farwells around here who was the superintendent who worked in the work as a superintendent, the boss factory. Now you want to hear something about Mount Riga?
Yes. Could I, on Mount Riga, just start with asking about some of the stories that I've heard. One story is that the first people to settle on Mount Riga were the Hessian deserters with prostitutes that had been brought over when they were fighting with George III.
I don't know. I never really heard that story.
I didn't.
I think, of course, Mount Riga had these two ponds, and it had quite a drop in the stream coming down. And there was a forge which had been reconstructed, which is up there, which was reconstructed to a large degree due to the efforts of Frank McCabe, who was a cousin of mine, he's now dead, and he was then very interested in that, and that is where the pigs, the pig iron, were forged in the bars. And
that's all, the one on the left, as you.
It's on the left. Yeah. And there's there's a plaque there, and the iron master was a man named Petit, who lived in the iron master's house, which was it's on the right, right where the road starts to go to Mount Washington.
Is that house still there?
Yes. It's one of the oldest houses in town. And, well, you probably had a lot of taping on this, but it was a fairly big town there, and...
Are you saying there's a big town up on the hill?
Fairly big, yes. Oh. Fairly big, yeah. And
did they have stores up there? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The schoolhouse, stores. And that's where all the charcoal cutting was done, the charcoal, the trees were cut for charcoal, and they had charcoal pits, and there's quite a bit of evidence that there was a great deal of charcoal made there for the forge, and the blue haze over that whole area for a great deal of time while the fires were going. The charcoal burners were never allowed to let their fires go out, and in the from around 1770 or so, this was a big business until things sort of simmered down around 1840 or 50.
Well, before the Civil War.
I think by then the Bessemer process had come in. It was brought by Alexander Holley, and the area subsided as far as having the best iron ore for making iron.
Do you have any knowledge of what ethnic groups worked in that area?
I've always heard that the charcoal burners were in the main people who came here in this general area. That would mean Falls Village, Cornwall, Sharon, from the Ardennes. And there are quite a few names of families. Now, to just name a few, in Salisbury, Bonnetel, in Sharon, the names like Gablo, it was Chevalier, Uvard, and several others, and they were not, I was always told, not French Canadians, but they were French from the Ardennes who were brought over here because that's where they had a lot of charcoal burning, and these people knew how to do it. I may be wrong.
That's what I believe. Along the way,
oh
right?
I picked it up right. I don't think I made it up. I doubt it anyway.
No, that doesn't sound that. Sound
I don't
like
think
it.
So. Well, and there are more. There are something. More. There are more from that background there in the general area that have not left yet. I'm a little more familiar with some of these names in Sharon than I am in Salisbury Lake, though.
Where does the name Mount Riga? Is it Mount Riga or Riga? Which is the
it
correct?
It is Mount Riga.
Riga.
I haven't any idea. Uh-huh. I once gave an interview, which supposedly is going to be in a New England magazine, where the man interviewing me said, and I agree with this, that people talk about Raggies and Mount Riga. Well, there are two aspects to that. One is the geographical location is very mafferous and very vague. For example, if you come from Sharon towards Lakeville, up near the beautiful site on the crest of the hill before you get to Hotchkiss School, you see the range there, and that is generally known as Mount Riga, but it isn't all Mount Riga. It could be other things. And then Raggies is used in a odd way, there are people, A, who were descendants or had worked on Mount Riga. There are people who go to Mount Riga. There are people, for example, Lila Nash referred to me in Lakeville Journal and Dwight Coles as a couple of raggies telling another raggie what to do. So it's more a state of mind. It's now, as far as persons are concerned, and also geographically, it's not that there is no real Mount Riga. It is generally an area, and it's generally a state of mind as to people and area. And there's some fairly posh, knobby, some of them are vaguely related to me, people who have camps up there, and they call themselves raggies, but they may work in New York in an advertising firm or be in the State Department or something like that. And yet, families like the Maury family, which is very prolific, and the Dunce family and other families, they're known as raggies too. So you can't really pinpoint it. I don't know how this article is going to work out. This man is writing would be rather interesting.
Where does Mount Riga what's the relationship between Mount Riga and Mount Washington?
Well, Mount Riga is really it's a series of little hills. They call it Mount Riga, but there are hills that are low mountains across the upper lake, three of them. They used to be called Alander, Riant, and Monument. Now they've got other names. There's Bear Mountain, there's Mount Riga. That's all generally the Mount Riga. It's really the end of the Taconic Range. I guess the really ragtag end of the Taconic Range is Indian Mountain, which comes down into Sharon, goes through Lakeville, and that is really the end of that is, and that runs towards Mount Washington, which is up here, Hillsdale, New York, and Egremont, New York, and that's...
When you go up to Mount Riga, and then you go across that road...
You come to Mount Everett.
Oh, Mount Everett, yes.
And Washington, Mount Washington is the name of a little town. Is it Everett or Everest?
Everett. Everett.
Everett. But that's the little last peninsula of the Taconic Range, I think. I believe it is, actually.
There's one other story that I picked up. I heard that after the Civil War, the property there was auctioned, and the families which bought that are still proprietors of that, and no one can buy property there unless they are part of that group?
My great-grandfather, Donald Judson Warner, was a judge, and my grandfather, Donald T. Warner, from my name, along with two other families, bought up this property for tax sales, I guess, because everybody had left, and the main holdings were pretty much in place by around 1899. That's also in the land records. This was incorporated as a land holding corporation in 1922, I think, which is very unusual. Other lawyers and people I know said it's very unusual to have that type of land holding in those days. It was almost unheard of. So it is a corporation. It's not a non-profit corporation. It is a corporation. The stockholders are in the main descendants of the original families. Not entirely, but in the main, and the original families control the corporation. But there are quite a few stockholders, I'd say over 100. We have our corporate set up, and directors, and president, and all the rest.
Now, there aren't 100 homes up there.
No. But stockholders, there's some who live in California, some who live in Kansas City. Some of them don't come very much, or hardly at all. Some don't come at all. No, there aren't. They're not called homes, they're called camps.
Camps.
Even though they are hardly camps. Some of them are there. Mine is more of a camp.
Marvelous place.
Well, really is. And we really do protect the northern and western reaches of Salisbury.
Now when you were growing up, you spent a lot of time up there.
Yes, I spent quite a bit of time up there and with my cousins, and you spent a week or more there. You didn't go down off the mountain very much. That was a big deal. Yes, and over the years, I have my children like it. And descendants pretty much like the setup.
Well, it's I often go canoeing up there.
Yes. Yes, when you consider it's only about 15 miles as the crow flies from the top of Monument Mountain, where the Connecticut, New York, and Massachusetts states all come together. It's only about 15 or 16 miles by air to the Taconic Parkway. Amazing. You might as well be up near Mount Katahdin or way up in the Adirondacks.
It's one of the few primeval places I have.
In southern New England. It really is, yeah. Now, do you want to go on to something else? How about baseball games?
Oh, absolutely.
One thing that used to be a big deal when I was a very little boy, then it continued when I got older and then I wasn't here very much to see it, was there was a great deal of interest in town baseball teams. Salisbury had its team, Lakeville, then there was Pine Plains, Canaan, Millerton. The Parsons brothers, Richie and Don Parsons, were the battery for Salisbury, and Lakeville had theirs. And what's amazing was that when they had these games on Sunday afternoon, and I'm talking about, I guess, in the 30s, when I can remember more, there would be 300 or 400 people there, and they took it very seriously, and it was a big deal. It would be in the Lakeville Journal then. Mr. Jones would have it in the Journal with all this stuff for one. And they had a regular, they had a league, and some were very good players, and it was a town team. And I believe, although I don't remember seeing them, there also was town football, although I don't really remember it. But in Lakeville, it was down near where community service is, the field, where there's now a sports field there. In Salisbury, it was sort of behind where, well, across the railroad tracks and on the way to what used to be known as Indian Cave. It's behind, well, the big shopping center, not Shagway, but that other one
behind it, where the auto shop
was. Yes, and behind there, and that was where the ball field was. This was a very serious thing, and they play right up until the end of September or something like that, Sundays. Not every Sunday there, because they'd be traveling around. The rivalry between Salisbury and Lakeville was very strong, and then there were gradually some infiltration of people connected with the preparatory schools around there. Hop Rudd played, and Dick Gurney from Hotchkiss and others, and this was a big, big deal. I can't even imagine it today. Nobody would bother to go. They couldn't even field a team. And as far as Mount Riga, to get back to Mount Riga, we used to have softball games around Labor Day, usually. And it was the Mountain Lions, people from Mount Riga, Raggies, and there are a few other ringers they might bring in. And the people from down in the valley, Lilies of the Valley, and we would deal with beer and, on Labor Day. But baseball games were quite the thing. Let's see, what else?
Wait, was soccer a game?
No, I don't think soccer, no, it wasn't. Okay. Not around here, boy. It may have been something. No, I don't
probably
think so.
It
really,
not.
Didn't,
it came
really
later.
Didn't come until World War II, I don't think. And then I don't think it ever was done as town soccer, but I know.
What about the town and gown situation? I saw that movie recently. Much cooperation.
You mean because of the school?
And the private schools and the...
Well, I don't know. I didn't go to either Salisbury or Hotchkiss School. I think when George Van Sanford became headmaster of Hotchkiss. He was a very forward-looking man. He became head there around 1926, I think. He encouraged some of the masters in Hotchkiss to get more involved. I don't know about Salisbury School, whether that was the case. And George Van Sanford himself was quite involved, I believe, in Democratic Town Committee in politics, and people like George Milne were involved, Board of Finance and stuff like that. I don't know as there was much of anything. The students were pretty, they didn't get off campus, a big deal to come down once a week, maybe, to the Jigger Shop in Lakeville, I think.
What was the Jigger Shop?
Well, you could get ice cream or candy, or Doc Leverty's drugstore, things like that.
Was that where the drugstore is present?
No.
Where was that?
Well, this must have been taped by other people. It was
never ran across
it. Well, the Leverty's was there until the 50s. It was across from where the Salisbury Bank used to be, where it's now a Wagon McNeil, Walt Shannon's, and that's where Leverty's was, and the Jigger Shop is where Pizza Place is, I think, in Lakeville.
Yeah, I haven't heard the Jigger Shop, but
there wasn't much. I mean, they were sequestered pretty much on campus, not the way it is today, I'm sure. But I went for a couple of years as a student at Indian Mountain School, and they were all boarders, and except, well, then I was a demi-boarder. And I went home weekends. But the road, this is the interesting thing about this, of course, Indian Mountain School didn't have any. Just about 35 or 40 boarders, I think. Didn't have much effect on the town at all, but the road was not paved going off the Millerton Road, Indian Mountain School Road. And I remember my father would bring me to where the paved road, where the dirt road going past Indian Mountain in the spring, say, late winter, would meet up with the paved road going to Millerton. He'd let me off and I'd have my little something that I was carrying, probably not carrying anything much. And it was all dirt, deep ruts, and, you know, not paved at all. I hadn't the faintest idea when that was paved, but it was really a dirt road, very rutted and very muddy. And I would think it was pretty damn far to walk.
I don't doubt
but that's the way the roads were. That's another interesting thing. Obviously, a lot of the roads, town roads that now are paved, of course, were not paved.
And that, and you're speaking about the 20s or early?
No, early 30s.
Early 30s.
It's only I think they began to start doing some paving when the WPA and stuff like that came in. But no, there were mainly dirt, except for the real main roads. It was dirt. I used to ride horseback up at Hamlet Hill Farm, which belonged to the Rand family. Charlotte Minor taught kids to ride, but we sometimes went when we were very young. 10, 11, I don't know, sometimes with grown-ups, with her and with kids, I don't know, maybe 10 people. I'd ride as far as Cream Hill in Cornwall. Yeah, oh yeah, and almost, oh yeah, long. Or up Mount Riga, and or over to Bartholomew's Cabo and stuff. You had no trouble because you're riding almost. Then you could go through fields. People would let you go through fields, but there were dirt roads that you would go along. There wasn't any paving of roads then. It was very.
So it was the WPA that.
Well, I don't know.
Well,
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I think in the 30s they began doing that.
Could we go back up to Mount Riga for a moment? Where were the stores? You mentioned that there was
a
community
exactly,
there.
But there was, yeah, there was a schoolhouse.
Do you know where that schoolhouse was?
Yes, it's on the left-hand side going up towards the old cemetery there. And let's see, I think that the schoolhouse is what burned down a couple of years ago. It belonged to McCabe family, probably Barnwell's. But there were, I don't know how many people lived there, but there was quite a settlement.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But I don't remember that.
Yeah.
What about politics?
Most interesting, sure.
Well, this is more from what I heard, but it was in that sleepy little village of Salisbury in Lakeville. Well, I had an uncle, Robert Scoble, who was a state senator. He's the one who helped build the town hall that burned down, the Scoble Library. It was through his family. Then my father was Secretary of State, and W.B. Rand, Blanchard Rand was a representative. All these people, sort of the, like the English system, I guess, they were sort of the squires who were, went to the legislature. But eventually, around 1920s, I guess, Abe Martin became, I don't know what he was, their henchman, became the boss, sort of, and he was, he had a garage in Mayfield where Herrick Travel is, and he was first selectman, the boss. I guess he paid attention to what these other people told him. It was very simple. There were so few voters, they could pretty much arrange things, I think. And then there was a Mortimer Bell, Jack Bell's father, was a representative. He was lawyer, Speaker of the House. Not a really tape Bell, Jack Bell.
Jack Bell.
Yeah. If he wants to be taped.
Mm-hmm.
And J. Mortimer Bell was known as Hal Roaring Bell, and he was Speaker of the House, and he was representative for a long time. Then Rainsford came along, and it was a pretty cut-and-dried thing. It was all arranged by a few people.
They had the power and the control.
Yeah, well, there weren't too many people that they...
What did they represent in terms of political spectrum? Republicans,
well,
Democrats?
Very Republican, basically very Republican from through the after the turn of the century, and very Republican.
And yet, Salisbury had a history in the Revolutionary War, and
no, but that had no bearing on what went on.
No bearing on.
I'd say it was very Republican, basically. Wanted to stop. I might try to think of something.
No,
else.
No, by all means, absolutely. No, we're good. We're going well.
Well, I really can't tell you too much more because
in terms of
my own recollections, a lot of it is what was told me, and but certainly by World War II. Before then, I mean, I really wasn't here that much, so.
In terms of cultural pursuits, the Sharon Playhouse came along later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But what was there when you were growing up here?
Well, they used to put on, well, there was movie theater, Stewart Theater. People went to movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and cool. There were afternoon movies, like Saturday, and I'm not sure Wednesday. And sometimes we would walk down the railroad track to Lakeville and go to the movies. And then there was a movie in Canaan, and I guess Norton.
And one in Lime Rock.
Movies?
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember that. They may have been, but I don't.
Yeah.
But there were plays that were put on in the town hall in Salisbury, and the amateur group would put on plays. I mean, they just get
community people?
Yeah, and they'd put on a play and get somebody to. And that was in the 30s. There was that sort of stuff that went on. And I think a lot of this was sparked by people, a lot of it, not all of it, by people who were connected with Hotchkiss School or Salisbury School.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't really know about further cultural things. Nobody
concerts,
had time.
Lectures, book reviews?
I don't know. I think there were concerts and things like that at Hotchkiss School, like, that I guess the public, some came to, but I don't think there was any great effort in those days to necessarily ask the townspeople to come to I don't know. I don't think so. But I would say the intellectual wasn't any more or any less than any other small town in those days, I guess.
Do you remember any significant problems, bad or good, the Riley murder thing?
That's also modern, yeah.
No, I mean before that.
Near our house, behind, behind the Salisbury package store and what used to be the market there, country store, sort of going up the hill, there was a little road, there was a little brick house there, which was the lockup. And I don't think I remember anybody being locked up there, but there was a town character named Jakey Holder who lived in that lockup. And that was his home. It was a one-room brick thing. I don't think there was any bathroom or anything. Maybe there was an outhouse, but I remember that. And Jakey Holder lived there, and he was very old and very eccentric. The other thing I do remember, in the early 30s, or when I was really young then, when the Depression first came, there were quite a few tramps. And my grandfather and grandmother always fed the tramps, and they would come to the door, and they would know, hobos or tramps, they would know this was the place they could get a meal. And I think they'd let them sleep down in their barn. This is in Ingleside, where Don Buckley and Gloria Buckley had their, that was my grandfather's place, had their antique place. And they used to, I can remember them coming to our house, and they'd come to the kitchen door and they would get something to eat and maybe perhaps do a little work for 50 cents.
Now these were just vagrants, people passing
through.
They weren't locals, they were people.
Locals, yeah. They wouldn't be there in the winter, but I do remember that. But I think that was...
You don't recall any kind of cases, let's say arson cases, no, or anything of that?
I don't know.
So that life was quiet and...
Well, no, there was no arson cases that I know of, or nobody told me about anyway.
Yeah.
No. There was... a garage, which was Dufour's, which was on the corner, and you must have been told this, was on the corner where you turn from the main road and start going towards Sharon instead of going up the hill towards Milton. There was a garage there.
Oh, yes.
Then Heaton Barnett, sort of variety store, and the Western Union. These were all there in the 50s, early 50s. There was a garage near the White Hart Inn, I think it was called Benjamin, something like that.
Is that where the firehouse is?
No, it's where the
Salisbury Ambulance, I meant, right.
But not too many other barbershops. More than they have nowadays. You can't get your hair cut.
You mean there was a barbershop in Salisbury?
I remember two in Lakeville. Let's see.
Yeah, there were
three in Lakeville. Mm-hmm. I guess none in Salisbury that I remember. And the White Hart Inn, and there was the Maple Shade, which was next to where the Ragamon is now. And then
the Maple Shade?
Yes,
was that a restaurant?
No, an inn.
An inn.
Mm-hmm. Will Russell went in that. And there was Interlaken, and there was the Wake Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another inn right at the top of the hill when you're really getting sort of out of Lakeville, going up the hill and on the right hand side. I think it was called the Gateway. Was an inn there. So a lot of inns.
Yeah.
Some were just summertime.
During your boyhood, were there many people that came from the city just as a resort? Was it kind of a resort place at that time? That happened
not
later?
Not really a resort at all, but I think they would come and stay for 3 or 4 days and rock in the piazzas and fortunes or something. It wasn't really a resort, but and they were on their way to Vermont. Or,
oh, I see.
But there were inns.
Stopped over, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes more than night, I'm sure.
Just a word or so, if you could, about this recent gas pipe thing. I know that you were involved in it. I read
well,
your piece in the
Lakeville
Journal.
Well, I'm not really. I just think it would be very bad for Litchfield County if it goes through. And we have to have cheap gas. If they can prove that we have to have cheap gas in the 90s or something like that, but I don't. I'm not very much involved.
In oh, you're not.
I was involved in the pump storage thing 16 or 17 years ago, but not in this.
I involved in what? 16, 17 years
well,
ago?
Well, this is all very recent. It's not.
Yeah.
Canaan Mountain was going to have a huge pump storage plant like Storm Canyon.
Oh,
a huge
yeah.
effort. Just now they just got
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Boy, is there anything else to do?
I really can't think of
no, that's
else.
Very good.
not too much.
No, that's great.
My memory is fading.
Not from what you've just told me.
Well.
I wish I could. Is there anybody else that occurs to you besides Jack Bell? Are there any
well,
other?
Well, it must be. I don't know who's been interviewed.
Oh.
I should have
brought a list.
Dwight Coles. They're crazy.
Let me
he's
check
about 87. He's yeah. in Georgia.
Oh, I'll have to
he,
check and
Sid
see.
Cole's brother.
I'll check and see if his name
is. He lives in Georgia.
Yeah.
Has for some years. Dot Dornbush.
Who?
Dot Dornbush. I think she's still around.
Is she?
It's all being taped. There's no point in
oh,
taping.
Oh, no.
This.
Yeah, there's no point in taping.
So, as I was saying, Bob, growing up around here, there were almost no blacks. There was a family that lived down from my family's house near Wayside, which belonged to my uncle, Kent Fulton. Little house is still there. There were some people named Gordon who lived there. There was somebody named Lizzie who was, she may have been Mrs. Folks, somehow related to Mrs. Folks, who made cookies and things like that. But practically none.
Not even as maids or servants?
I don't know. I don't think so. No, I really don't. There just were practically none. And that goes for the surrounding towns, too. And another curious thing is that at least in Salisbury, Lakeville, and Sharon, I guess surrounding areas, there were, say, prior to World War II, as far as I can recall, almost none or practically no Jewish people or people of the Jewish faith. They just weren't. Some of them began to come into Millerton and became merchants there in Canaan. And in Sharon, there was a big settlement. People bought farms who were Jewish, and I think this was back in around World War I. Generally,
farmers?
Yes. Uh-huh. But generally speaking, there were very, very few. So it was really pretty much the stores, the few little stores and things were run by Yankees mainly.
You mentioned Jewish farmers, which is...
I don't know. They were a group came around...
You don't know what happened to them, or...
Well, some of them are still around here. There's Gorkovsky and Weinstein, and there are some around here now, still descendants of those. But really, it was a ethnically pretty Yankee. Yeah.
That would also mean, certainly, that there were no Hispanics or nothing
none,
like that.
None at all. None, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Right.
Rather...
So that we could think in terms of Dutch, French, English.
Yes.
Now, what about the Italians?
As long as I can remember, for some reason, there were a big influx of Italians who settled in Canaan. and all these families and descendants of them are still in Cana, Sagala, Gandolfo, De Prataccini. Well, sure. There are many.
Yeah.
Yes, there were a lot. When some came, then others would come.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking mainly about a history of Salisbury.
Yeah, right. Well, Lime Rock had a lot of Italians.
Yes, they did. Yes, it worked with Barnum Richardson.
That's right, yes.
But that would be about the only ethnic group.
Was there, when the Italians, this group in Lime Rock, mm-hmm. who were working in the ore, mm-hmm. and so on, was there much mixing between Salisbury and Lime Rock at that time? Or
I don't really know.
You don't recall any?
I don't know. But Lime Rock became a ghost village when Barnum Richardson sort of went kafloop.
Yeah.
And then was all bought up by Alfred Stone and Edith Stone. They bought it all up, practically. They bought all those little houses.
Right.
I think around the, when the crash came, around that
around time. That time,
around
yes.
Around then.
Yeah.
And those houses are like factories. Those houses like Factory Street now are very expensive houses. They're just small frame houses.
We live in
a dime a dozen. Then.
Yeah, we have one. Is there anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Everybody has a really, or at least a lot of people have really different uncles, and I had one named I. Kent Fulton. He was a.
Let's spell that. I. Kent.
His name was Irving Kent Fulton, but he called himself I. Period Kent Fulton. K-E-N-T, Fulton. He was married to my paternal aunt, Beth Fulton, and he came from Waterbury. There's a Fulton Park there. He's a descendant of Robert Fulton, the guy who did the steamship. Yeah. And he graduated from Yale around 1904, 06. Married my aunt, and then really settled up here. And he was a man of means, but he was a solid partner of a brokerage firm in Hartford. And at one time, he owned an incredible amount of real estate in Salisbury, as well as a big place at Sachem's Head down in Guilford, right